Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. Little Van Halen for you there. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Another big fan of Van Halen is our guest this half hour, this hour, I should say, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kipling Editors. Joan, welcome back.
That's actually true. I saw them last year.
Yeah, so you like
they
that music?
They were great.
Huh? Mm-hmm. So you're always complaining about my music, but the truth is, it's not that there's something wrong with my music. It's just that you don't like all the stuff that I have.
Well, the stuff you just played now isn't as ancient as the stuff you normally play.
Oh, okay, all right. So classics are out.
People under 50 have actually heard Van Halen.
Joan, welcome back. We missed you last week.
Did you now?
Well, not too much. We missed you a little bit. I think my audience missed you because I had to do a half-hour Kiplinger report by myself.
Oh, that's scary.
So they were missing Joan about that time. Joan, did you know that this is National Stress-Free Family Holiday Month?
That sounds like an oxymoron, stress-free and family holiday.
It's a contradiction in terms, isn't it?
Sure is, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking June might be a good month for that, but not December. Somebody obviously was having some fun when they posted that holiday.
That month,
didn't they? All right, Joan, let's get into the letter, and I'm really glad you're here this time because you're our currency expert, right?
Oh, no. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
You must really be desperate today.
Well, the lead story is this. Is the U.S. dollar headed for a crash? That's the lead Kiplinger story. Sounds a little sensational, Joan.
But well, that's true. And we debunk that idea in the next section of the letter. So we're not saying it's headed for a crash, but we do say it's going to get lower before it gets higher.
Well, it has been dropping for the last, year and a half or so?
Something like that.
I've commented on this before when it was coming down, how much that tied with the tax advantages, the tax breaks, and just the general recovery of the economy, that the lowering of the devaluing of the dollar against other exchange rates has really helped U.S. manufacturing, hasn't it?
It sure has. That's very true.
It's made our goods more valuable, cheaper, for other people to buy. So that's
right.
Helped.
Easier for us to export, sure.
Right. But it really, that alone, because there's such a, and you guys point this out in the letter, because there's such a tremendous gap between what we export and what we import, the devaluation of the dollar could never overcome the trade deficit, could it?
That's right.
There's not enough exporting that we can do to overcome that. So basically, you guys are warning that we could be headed for a little bit of a fall.
Other thing, too, it's sort of interesting. There's a story in today's Wall Street Journal, mm-hmm. and this is nothing new to you, but the sentence jumps out at me, that Americans have become global consumers of last resort, gobbling up far more than the U.S. produces. Now, we've been talking about that for ages, but that's one of the reasons you're going to keep having this trade imbalance.
Right.
We can't export our way out of it.
Right. That's exactly right. And one of the things that you guys point out is that part of one of the side effects of the weakening of the dollar is going to be some inflation, because it makes other goods more expensive.
Right. And in fact, there's another story I was just reading this morning before we went on the air that the Fed is seriously looking at that and is very concerned about inflation. And it looks like they will be leaning toward raising rates in the coming months.
Right. Yeah. In fact, they've got another meeting coming up in about a week and a half,
almost
a little less than 2 weeks. They'll be maybe raising rates again in December. But the thing is if you think about it, we've got the dollar is weakening, which means it costs more for us to bring goods in, to buy goods from abroad. We have a higher import than export ratio, and so that means that the goods we're bringing in, which we're bringing in plenty of, are costing us more, and so that's inflationary, isn't it?
Exactly, that's right.
So the dollar, I guess maybe we could say the value of the declining dollar maybe has run its course.
The thing is, in a way, that's good just because we don't want it to crash.
Right. Well, Joan, I'm not sure I understand what it means when a country country strengthen their own dollar? What do they do? Do you know that?
Well,
you hear people talking about, well, the president talks about wanting a strong dollar, but he's not doing anything about it.
Well, mechanically, I mean, you can have the central bank go into the open market and buy dollars, mm-hmm. so that there's fewer out there,
right.
fewer of them out there.
That's how they would strengthen it. They would increase the dollar.
Or they could, as they say, talk it up.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Well, just saying they want a stronger dollar.
So threatening to buy it up, huh?
Yeah, real subtle.
We got a lot of cash here. We're going to buy some dollars, so maybe that'll make other people go out and buy them.
But I don't think talking the dollar up is working right now, because I think people realize that secretly the Bush administration doesn't mind
right.
that the dollar's weakening.
So it wouldn't do any good for you and me.
Mentioned.
It wouldn't do any good just for you and me to talk the dollar up, then, right? Is that what
we could try?
We could try. Let's talk the dollar up, Joan.
Okay.
A little bit. Well, another thing. That's happening is it's the weakening of the dollar against other currencies is really not making any friends around the world either, is it?
Well, no, and part of the reason for that is that other countries peg their currencies to the dollar.
A lot of them do, but the euro doesn't. And when our dollar is cheaper, then a number of things happen. You know, as we said earlier, their exports, to us become more expensive. So we buy less of them. But also look at the tourism situation.
Oh well, yeah, that's a good point. If the euro is stronger, that means it's much more expensive to go over there.
And it's much less expensive for Europeans to come here
and spend their euros here.
Exactly.
Or turn their euros into dollars and spend them here. Yeah.
It's the opposite of what happens with our exported goods.
Right.
And so they spend their money over here instead of staying home. And so, you know, against the euro, against the pound, the dollar has been dropping. Some people have said, some people use the word, I think in the journal article you talked about, they use the word precipitously.
Ooh.
And so, there are people, well, there, and I guess it was yesterday's journal, there was a pretty strong article in the journal about this issue. And when the journal, you know, the journal is always in favor of growing our manufacturing, growing our exports. When the journal comes out and says, hey guys, you know, we may have a problem here, that's something to pay attention to. Stand by. When we come back, we're going to talk about what China has to do with all this. And it affects you and me, ladies and gentlemen, and our small businesses. I promise you. 20 after, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest.
One fine day, you're going to want me for your
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about the dollar. How's it doing? It's actually falling. Joan, it's fallen. The dollar has fallen down, and it can't get up. maybe we need to get one of those little pull chains.
Get
or
one
something.
Of those medic alerts.
Yeah.
We need to get. Try that.
Yeah, but let's talk about the relationship to the dollar. In some of these other currencies, you know, the Europeans are already, we're not exactly on their Christmas list these days because of our foreign policy. And you know what? I won't say what they can do about that because I don't really care.
Yeah,
what
keep
they,
it clean. It's a family show.
I don't really care what they think about that. I really, truly, honestly don't care at all. But in terms of them, I do care about free trade, as you know. I'm very interested in that. And so I don't blame them. If they're a little bit disgruntled with us because of our dollar and it's made their products, you know, not on par with ours. And I'd be a little grumpy about that, too. But this hasn't helped our overall relationship with them. And because, you know, they've got some serious employment problems in Europe. serious True. Problems. But also Canada. You know, Canada is also not very happy with us in a lot of ways. The president was just up there, and he got a tepid reception while he was up there.
But
the dollar declining is affecting the ability for Canada to compete with us in terms of exporting to us, isn't it?
True. That's right.
And on the heels of the mad cow scare, which hurt their cattle business, and also the soft lumber situation, you know, we're not making a lot of we're not winning friends and influencing people with our monetary situation,
right.
so we got all that situation going on there. But then there's China, and China is the relationship of the dollar with our trade relationship with China, the dollar and the yuan with our trade relationship is really an interesting issue, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because as I think we've talked about, the yuan is pegged to the dollar, and Bush is trying to let the dollar fall against the yuan, and there's been a lot of pressure, I think, on China for quite a while to get the yuan to no longer be pegged to the dollar, to get it to float freely,
right. Yeah.
To establish its own level.
But China is not willing to do that because nope. they're actually, as you guys point out this week, Joan, they're actually in, I think you guys pointed this out, they're actually in have a problem. Their own economy is growing through growing pains. They've got some credit challenges, and even though their overall growth of their economy is good, you know, they haven't really, it's not really a mature economy in terms of being a free market economy. It's got a lot of rough edges, doesn't it?
Right, and the growth is a bit haphazard. So it's that China has plenty of challenges in terms of its economy.
So if they let their yuan, by the way, what do the Chinese call their currency after a Spanish name? I never understood that, but anyway, it's yuan, I think. Isn't that how you spell it? Yuan.
Yuan. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, so maybe they pronounce it differently, but anyway, the yuan is. If it floated free, it would impact their exports, and they think that I think the Chinese think that their economy couldn't stand that kind of a problem.
Hey, welcome to the free market.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I would say.
Welcome to prosperity. There are challenges there, aren't there?
Welcome to the real world.
But think about this: if we could somehow, of course, we've been job hunting the Chinese for a long time to get them to let their currency float free instead of pegging it to the dollar. So what that means, folks, is every time the dollar goes down, the yuan goes down, and so we are not able to pick up any kind of a benefit. Where we pick up a benefit when our currency goes down, we pick up a benefit from other currencies like the euro.
Right.
And the Canadian dollars, it's almost on par with us now. And I don't even remember if it's ever been on par before, the Canadian dollar.
Yeah, that's very unusual.
But we don't pick up any advantage from China. And we import a lot of stuff from China.
You think? Yeah.
So if we could somehow get them to their economy to get strong enough where they could let the yuan float, then we could really make up a lot of this trade gap, couldn't we?
That's right. Yeah, that would make sense.
Mm-hmm. Another thing, Joan, that concerns a lot of people, a lot of smart people, people smarter than me about this issue, is that if the lower our dollar goes, it might cause investors to lose faith in our dollar and to pull their money out.
Boy, and that's huge because, as you know, we have some pretty high deficits in this country.
Yep.
And one of the reasons that they have not impinged on the economy too much, in other words, they have not impinged on private borrowing, is because you have plenty of foreign investors still willing to hold dollars
yep.
and invest in this country. If that were to change in any significant way, that would really be very harmful to the economy.
Well, it could be globally disastrous, Joan.
Mm-hmm.
That was a point I think the Journal was pointing out this week
right.
in their article was that if investors, foreign investors, lose confidence in the dollar, the issue now, it seems, the Journal wasn't saying that we're at that point now, but they're saying we could be approaching the point where people would lose confidence in us, and that would be a really ugly global economic impact.
That's right. Good
so,
point.
So that's, did you ever see the movie Rollover, Joan?
No.
Back in the early 80s, there was a movie with I've forgotten who the guy was, but the woman in the thing was Jane Fonda, and as I remember, and it was about this issue. So, folks, if you ever get a chance to go rent that movie or find it, it's called Rollover. Very interesting, very compelling, very exciting movie. So, there might be some similarities in what's going on right now. Quick break, right back with Joan Pride after these messages. 29 after. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
You're listening to a man whose work is never done.
In a job like yours, even when it's finished, there's always one more thing to do.
And his job is to make your job easier.
It's a very difficult job, and the only way to get through it is we all work together as a team. And that means you do everything I say.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for hanging around with us. And if you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And also all the other things you can do. Don't forget to check out the archives. Over 3,000 of those puppies there at our website. And I don't know how many articles, hundreds and hundreds. Certainly over 1,000 of articles that we've written, either I've written or a couple of hundred of mine there, and bunches of others of our Brain Trust members, and lots of things you can do there, including finding out more about our friend and our guest and our longtime Brain Trust member, Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, let's move over to page 2 and talk about workers' comp insurance. What's the news on that?
Okay. Let me move over to page 2 as well. And I can't believe I actually have some good news on this because it's been a while. But we're seeing a 3% increase in premiums, which is a lower increase and quite a bit lower than last year, which we were saying is 7%.
So we don't like the number, but we like the trend.
We love the trend.
Yeah.
And we actually say that some firms with very good track records may see decreases in their rates and maybe up to double figures.
Well, I'm gonna get on my soapbox here that I've been on before. It's a little soapbox, John. It's not the big one, and that is to encourage small business owners to find another way to lower your workers' comp insurance and your overall benefit costs. Is to think about going with a firm that will. I used to call them leasing firms. They would actually lease your employees. They have another name for it now. But where you can become part of a larger group, you hire your own people, you manage them, they're your people, but in terms of the payroll, you're actually part of this larger group. And Joan, when I had a construction business, I saved a ton of money on workers' comp by being part of that group.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So check that out, folks. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, email me or call me or something, and I'll help you find that. Let me give you one example of a website you can go to that if you wanted to find out this. It's a company that I know about. It's called Administaff.com. Administaff.com. Check that out, and you'll get an idea about what I'm talking about. That's a good way to lower your costs. Joan, what about one of the things that you guys point out? Is that one of the big reasons for the increases in workers' comp these days is the health insurance costs.
Well, that's right. And, you know, that's been the rate driver for a while, and it still is. And we're saying it's still more than half of workers' comp costs.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's still there.
But apparently accidents are down.
Yes.
So now, what do you attribute that to, Joan? What do you think we can attribute to accidents being down? Because we're doing less manufacturing?
Well, I would like to think that companies are creating safer workplaces.
Maybe both of those things, huh?
Or well, I don't know how they, when they say accidents are down, what do they mean by that? But if they're just saying cumulatively overall accidents are down, maybe that just shows that we have more of a white-collar atmosphere or environment.
Surface-oriented economy. So that could be a good thing. There's no question about that. I mean, you're not as likely to get hurt on the job if you're sitting at a workstation than if you're, you know, out walking around in a mill or something.
Right.
Yeah. What about this thing with the IRS and retiring early, Joan? You got some news on that, don't you?
Well, yes, I do. And the IRS is kind of easing rules that would allow an employee, when they get very close to retirement, to cut back on the amount of hours they work and then start to take a portion, a prorated portion of their pension benefit. They would have to be at least 59 and a half but they could be eligible for retirement, or they would have to be eligible for retirement, and they would have to work 20% fewer hours, and then they could start taking this benefit without violating pension rules.
Right. And, of course, is that just for defined benefit plans?
That's just for defined benefit plans because, as you know, with defined contribution plans, anybody can start withdrawing at age 59
right.
and a half. There's no contract with the employer on that. That's really
right.
your own personal money at that point.
And so this is not really any kind of news that small business owners necessarily would benefit from, except to the degree that maybe there's an employee, Joan, listening right now who would like to retire a little bit early and start their own small business.
Well, that may be a way to think about it, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, you know me, I'm always thinking of the small business people.
Right.
That's my job. That's what people pay me big bucks for.
And this would make it easier for them to get started because they could kind of ease into it, still have some income, you know, start taking their pension, work fewer hours, devote a little time to the new business.
Bingo. I'm just saying, you know, that could happen.
And it's possible.
Right? That's my job. That's what I get paid the big bucks
right.
to point out every day. Stand by. Quick break. 22. We'll be right back with Joan Pride. More to come. We're going to talk about selling online. Right after these messages. To make you say that you love. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for hanging around with us. And let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, we got Phil Ehrman, who's been with us before. He's with the Million Dollar Roundtable. We're going to be talking about some financial information that he wants to share with us. Elise Bennett will be joining us. We'll be talking about online marketing and of some kind. I know that's what she usually talks about. And then we've got Leslie Mills and James Long, and I'll tell you more about them a little bit later on. Let's get back to Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, give us your website, please.
Sure. It's www.kiplinger.com.
K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R, Kiplinger.com, even though when I say it, I don't always say the G, which is kind of the way I think they say it. And that's a good website, folks, and you can go there. They can go there and subscribe to all your publications, can't they, Joan?
They sure can, yes.
We got the flagship, the Kiplinger Letter, in
right.
81 years or so in the business, and that's the weekly publication. Then they got three biweekly letters, the California, the Tax Letter, and the Agriculture Letter.
Right.
And you're the agriculture expert, aren't you, Joan?
Oh, yes, that's
you
me.
You can give us the pig futures and all that kind of stuff, can't you?
Sure.
Yeah, and then they got that magazine, Joan.
Absolutely. It's Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
So I encourage you to go to their website and check it out and subscribe. Don't forget the Jim Blassingame special 30-day free trial that they'll give you. And also, if you don't want to go online, you'd like to make a phone call, Joan, give it to them, please.
Absolutely. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Did I mention that this is National Stress-Free Family Holiday Month, Joan? Have I mentioned that?
I think you're looking forward to your stress-free family holiday.
I'm waiting on that, Joan.
But I think you should say that five times.
I'm waiting on that to happen. Actually,
yeah.
Joan, what about this the news on store sales and online sales? What's up with that?
Well, this is kind of interesting. We're saying that retailers are going to try to get consumers who would like to shop online to get into stores more during the holiday season. And by offering them such things as coupons that they'll offer them online, coupons that can only be used in the store.
Yeah, you got to show up and have your smiling face there in front of them.
Yeah. But the other thing that this says that they're going to impose tighter restrictions on free shipping for online purchases, I'm seeing more offers for free.
Yeah, me too.
Online shipping. The only thing I can come up with is that maybe the sites I'm looking at that are giving me free shipping are those that are online only. They're not. They don't have a physical presence.
Mm-hmm. MasterCard did some research. Priscilla Huff was on the show earlier this week. She's a professional shopper, and she brought some MasterCard research that showed that online purchasing was up like 27%. And it kind of tracks with what you guys are saying here, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
And so online shopping is definitely up. And you know, the all I can say to people who have a traditional storefront is, you know, it's no different from another competitor moving in, only it's a lot more competitors, and they're all coming in over the internet. And if people are buying online, It's, in my opinion, it's because you haven't made, and they're not buying from you, you haven't made a compelling enough case for them to do business with you. But it also means that just because you have a traditional business doesn't mean you can't offer online resources for your customers. And Joan, they don't even have to offer e-commerce. They could just offer e-shopping.
What's the difference between e-shopping and e-commerce?
E-shopping is where you can't actually spend the money. You have to go into the store, but you can still see what I have. Whereas
right.
e-commerce is where
right.
you lay your money down. See, the overarching umbrella is e-business. Inside of e-business is e-shopping, e-commerce, and e-customer service.
That's e-complicated.
I know it. You're right.
Yeah.
Good one there. That's a good one. But it's not really that complicated. But my point is how many times would you buy something that you wouldn't buy it without touching it, without looking at it, but you would like in your comfort of your home to be able to go see if they have it and what it looks like and what the options are, what the price
is. Right. If I can see what it looks like and enlarge the picture,
yeah.
That
and,
helps me a lot.
And
but
then,
I'm
you
not
go
a good
down to the store and pick it up.
I'm a big online shopper. I like shopping online. It doesn't bother me not to go in the store. So if you're a small shop somewhere and you're, say, I live in Washington, D.C., if you're in Montana, you have a very good chance of grabbing me if you have an online presence.
Right, right. And the thing to remember is not so much the online presence is not so much that that somebody else is taking you. You don't need to think of it as that somebody's taking a customer away from you. You need to think of it as you're making your goods available to people who would never come in your store.
That's exactly it.
As you just said.
Vastly expand your client base.
Yeah. So, but again, Joan, a lot of times people get intimidated because they think that, well, I can't have as good of an e-commerce site as Macy's does because I don't have that much money. Well, you know what? You'd be surprised how inexpensive it is. Really, not inexpensive, but it is not too expensive to have an online presence. And just, and you know, Joan, if you lived in a small town in America and the store that you like to shop in had a website that you could go look at what they have, you know, you're out and around, you like to go out and touch things and see them, why not go there and look at them online, then go buy it at the store? You do that.
Sure, but the other thing too is remember, you don't have to have 500 products on your website.
Right.
If you have a couple of really good products,
mm-hmm.
I would urge you to get them online and sell them because people will buy them if they're good products.
And they're
creative and they're interesting and innovative.
Right, and there's never been a better time for a small business to have an online presence because, Joan, there are so many people out there who are making website development available on an incremental basis, a per monthly charge. They'll develop the site for you. They'll build your catalog. They'll make it easy for you to get. If you want to do e-commerce, they make that easy for you. There are a lot of companies out there doing this right now. And if you don't know who those people are, folks, let me know and I'll help you with that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how the budget's going, how the federal budget's working out, and we're also going to talk a little bit about finance. We're going to talk about some what banks are doing to attract small businesses, and that's coming up right after these messages. It's 10 till. We're back. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Joan Pride is our guest, senior editor with the Kipling Editors. Joan, you guys say here at the top of page 3, Bush will continue to impose austerity on domestic spending. When's that going to start? Huh?
You got me.
I didn't know we'd had any austerity on domestic spending, did you?
Well, actually, it's true.
I thought the floodgates were open.
No, well, only in certain areas. In certain areas, they have been ratcheting down all along. A good example, just from what I know, from people I know who work there, is that the prison system is badly underfunded
mm-hmm.
and badly underbuilt, which is going to be a problem in the coming years.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, we also know that Mr. Bush has yet to veto a bill. Is that unprecedented, Joan, you think?
Boy, I think it's got to be at this point in the administration.
4 years? He's never vetoed a bill?
But, of course, you'd have to go back and look at how many vetoes occurred when the president and both houses of Congress were of the same party.
That's a good point. Yeah, and so we'd have plenty of that over, well, not plenty, but we'd have a few years of that over the last 50 years or so. I know that the patent office needs more money, too. You're talking about the prison systems. You guys reported that the patent office could use some more money to answer all the increases in applications that they've got. I've heard guys from the patent office speak and point that out, and I've also heard people who are inventors talk about how slow the process is and how much they need. It's hurting their business. It's hurting their opportunity to be so for the patent office to be so slow.
Right, and I was going to say, yeah, that's something that could directly have a good impact on business if they could fix that.
Right, absolutely. Joan, let's move down and talk about finance. You guys point out that small to medium-sized companies should be expecting a little more attention from banks next year. Tell us about that.
That's right, and I don't think they've ever ignored them, but I think banks see this as the growth area because we're saying loan volume among small and medium-sized companies will be up 12% to 15%. So, and they were only in single digits last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you will see, you know, more generous loan terms and things like that, which would be a big help.
Well, another thing is I made this analogy earlier this week that in 01, 2, and 3, we were kind of just trying to survive, a lot of people were.
Right.
And 04, even though the economy was pretty strong, we weren't really all that confident of it. We were still a little bit worried about it.
That's
but
right.
I think once we get into 05, we've got a little bit of the economy's got a little bit of maybe stronger legs under it, and I think maybe we're going to be a little more confident, a little more hopeful. So I suspect our loan applications, not just the loans made, but loan applications will go up because of that.
That makes sense, yeah.
And so I think we can look forward to that. Joan, we had Chad Moutre on yesterday, who's chief economist for the Office of Advocacy over at the SBA, and he was telling us, you know, we're still going to wind up with an annual growth rate of probably, you know, somewhere around 3.5% or so. That's when you think about that. Compared and the job situation is coming back significantly. When you
right.
think about all that compared to what we've and you compare that what we've been through in the last 3 years, that's a pretty remarkable economy we got. You know what?
Boy, it amazes me.
It's incredibly resilient. It's just
right.
it's a test. And you know what, Joan? With small business owners making up half of that economy, I think it's a testament to small businesses.
Well, sure, and you know, the businesses that get started nowadays are smaller ones, so they're growing like weeds.
The courageous heroes of the marketplace. There's
That's
no
right.
question about that. And as you know, Joan, I know you agree with me. You join me in saying this. My hat's off, and I know yours is too to those great people out there in the marketplace.
Absolutely.
Joan, let's talk a little bit. I know you guys covered the congressional leaders' changes in some of the committees this week, but I'm really more interested in the next 30 seconds in what's going on with the cabinet, the president's cabinet.
Well, let's see. The most recent person to vacate is the Secretary of Homeland Security, Mr. Ridge.
Were you surprised at that?
Well,
I
don't
know.
In
that job less than anybody of the others.
Yeah, that's got to be the highest stress job imaginable.
Yeah, yeah. You know who might be a prospect for that job? I don't know if he'll get it. Is a friend of ours, Governor Jim Gilmore, former governor of your state of Virginia. You know, he was the chairman of the Gilmore Commission on weapons of mass destruction.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm going to put his name in the pot as a possible. I've seen his name mentioned once, but not he's not on everybody's list. But I'm going to put his.
I have my little local bias. He was the man who said he would get rid of our car tax and then didn't do it.
Yeah. Well, you're still mad at him about that, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
I'll point that out to him next time I talk to him.
Thank you.
Hey, Joan, thank you for being here today. Good job.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you.
And we'll see you next time.
Okay.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you that when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.